I'm super happy. Are you happy? Welcome to the Be You, Find Happy podcast. Here you'll find tips and tricks to inspire you on your way to happiness, to live a courageous life of authenticity, and learn how to speak your truth with grace. I'm Michaela Johnson, and welcome to our podcast. The world is changing and things are becoming crazier by the moment, but you can thrive and you can still experience happiness. If you like this podcast, please click subscribe. Your likes and comments really help this podcast stay as a top iTunes podcast. For more inspiration and happiness, make sure you check out the website, beyoufindhappy.com, B-E-Y-O-U, findhappy.com.
Hi, Tom. Welcome to the Be You, Find Happy podcast. How are you doing today?
Well, I'm doing quite terrific. I appreciate that, Michaela, and thank you so much for having me on your podcast.
Yes, and we are going to talk about some really cool stuff, like you being a self-confessed serial entrepreneur and some other really awesome things, because I have tried some of your some of the stuff that you are putting out, and it's pretty spectacular and fantastic. Particularly love the ketchup-ish stuff. Talk to me a little bit about how you got into what you do and what you've got going on.
Well, I have a lot of things going on, actually. Like, the Guy Gone Keto thing is kind of my side hustle. So that is, I would say, side hustle and passion project. My daytime job, the one that keeps a roof over my head, is Icon Foods. And at Icon Foods, I'm the CEO and chief food scientist. So I spend a lot of time in the lab, you know, coming up with different ways to get sugar out of consumer products. That's my job. That's what I do.
And how did you decide that you were going to do that? How did you decide, you know what, I'm going to remove sugar, and what did you replace it with? Like, what was the whole like precipice behind this needs to happen? And what did you ultimately decide you would use instead? Because since we're such an addicted, I mean, we're really just addicted to sugar. We really are. I mean, whether it be alcohol or whether it be sugar, you know what I mean?
I think we're addicted to a lot more than that. I think we're addicted to social media. I think we're addicted to drama. There's a ton of addictions. And I mean, sugar is just one of them. But how I got started on this is kind of interesting. I was living in Arizona at the time. It was in the very early 90s, and ran into a gentleman who had just come back from Paraguay. And I mean, I was fascinated by this guy, because he would just go into the jungle and find different types of herbs and, you know, and what he thought could be remedies. And so he shared with me a jar of this green paste. And when I first tasted it, I was like, wow, this is like super sweet. So it was maybe 25 times sweeter than sugar. It had like some very pronounced like herbal off notes and stuff. But that's kind of when I took the red pill and went down the rabbit hole, because I was like, wait, this doesn't have sugar in it. It doesn't have any calories. It doesn't have any carbs. How can this be? How can something exist in nature that doesn't contain sugar, yet it's sweet and it's natural? So that was the genesis of it all. And at that point, I needed to know everything there was to know about alternative sweeteners that comes from plants. I mean, that plant was the stevia plant, but there's dozens of other plants and fruits in nature that have, you know, that have fruit or have sugar or sweetener qualities in them that don't affect blood sugar. And that became my journey.
And so how does it apply for people who, you know, are struggling with diabetes and things like that?
Well, I mean, our diabetes epidemic, I think, is caused by processed food, and it's all of the sugar that is in processed food. And so a lot of, I mean, I'm on a lot of podcasts, and it always seems to come up that there's some sort of a conspiracy theory that why there's so much sugar in our food. Like, is it to get us addicted to their products and stuff? And look, I'm not a big fan of sugar, but I'm less of a fan of conspiracy theories that are unfounded. The fact is that, you know, that the food industry is driven by revenue. You know, it's driven by tangible bottom line gains, and the way that they continually give dividends and profits to their shareholders is by cutting costs. And so sugar is very cheap. It's also subsidized. So you can put, you know, you can put sugar in ketchup instead of tomatoes and all of the other delicious compounds that usually go into it. You can just add a bunch of sugar and then salt and some tomatoes. And now, you know, you've basically replaced tomatoes, which are going to be, you know, a couple dollars a pound, with something that's 15 cents a pound. And so you've lowered your cost of goods sold, and now you're making a much bigger profit. Sort of the hidden benefit to corporations is that sugar is addicting, you know, but I don't think it was intentional. And how can people who suffer from diabetes, how can they use alternative sweeteners? I would just do your homework. Use stevia. I mean, stevia is 200 times sweeter than sugar, so you can't just drop it in like you would sugar. But that's, you know, that's where my company comes in, and we are able to mix other, you know, other natural ingredients and compounds to create something that is on parity with sugar as far as sweetness goes, but doesn't have any calories or carbs and doesn't affect your blood sugar levels.
You know, a couple of thoughts. The first one is I saw a very interesting video documentary type thing, a little YouTube thing. A scientist actually took a McDonald's hamburger and he laid it out on the counter and then put all of the ingredients that make up that McDonald's hamburger also on the counter. And basically it wasn't even food. I mean, it's just not even food. So, you know, I do agree that they have probably been largely driven by financially cutting corners to produce product quickly at a low cost rate. Because, you know, that's kind of the agenda for most businesses. But I don't think after what I saw in 2020, when all of the fast food restaurants were open, but the small ma-and-pa businesses were shut down. I actually started to not see that as a theory, but as a fact that we can follow most of the money to a handful of people in this country, actually worldwide. And that clearly they, you know, don't have, they're driven by greed. Clearly they're driven by greed. Because you can't explain why the Ma and Pa sandwich shop was shut down, but right next door to it, Taco Bell was open.
Yeah, well, it's cost and convenience. I mean, people will be, you know, people will go to, you know, restaurants or go to food supply that's convenient and cheap. And, you know, Taco Bell, you know, places like Taco Bell and McDonald's and Burger King, they're able to scale, which means they're able to buy massive volumes of this stuff that they call food, you know, for not a lot of money. And, you know, they have a system down. I don't eat fast food, and I don't support like a fast food culture. And I think that I think it's a shame to see, you know, these smaller mom pop, you know, restaurants and eateries, you know, going out of business. You know, I hope that it comes back, and I hope that, you know, people's awareness starts to increase and that there's some sort of a food revolution where people just refuse to eat it, you know, at fast food restaurants.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I think it's interesting how often, you know, we push things like drugs and stuff when there are a lot of natural ways to heal our bodies. And it seems like when we remove the processed foods, we do remove the addiction on some level to whatever is happening in the, you know, dopamine receptors of the brain, you know, and we start to, I noticed, for example, I cut sugar out for a long time, for 3 months while I was doing like a cleanse. Mm-hmm. And when I went to eat sugar again, it was the most disgusting, like way too sweet, not natural yuckiness that I could ever put in my mouth. Like I was appalled at how gross it was. And I was okay with fruit and things like that, but if it was like a piece of candy, especially something, I think it was about October when I started to add sugar back in, like candy corn, gosh, it was like vile to my mouth, you know, like how is this even possible?
Good
thoughts.
Yeah, I think, you know, well, when you look at like food addictions, you know, like I would say for the past 3 weeks, I've been working on kind of an interesting biohack, you know, using peptides that sort of trigger different sort of appetite situations for me. And it's been super interesting because, you know, I think that, you know, I think that examining your relationship with food is critical. Like food should be sustenance and it shouldn't be something that you use as a modality to feel better or to relax or to be happy or to, you know, deal with depression. And I think that's, you know, what I've really found in the past 3 weeks in this biohack is how much I used food to fill myself up. It wasn't about sustenance, you know, because really, like when people start thinking about a portion size is what fits in your palm, you know, and when you look at the actual wow. size of the stomach, you can't really fit more than maybe a palm or two of food in your stomach without your stomach starting to stretch somewhat. And, you know, the thing that I discovered is just how much people overeat. And specifically, you know, with me, because I won't make a statement like, yeah, everybody's eating too much unless I have firmly looked in the mirror and addressed that with myself. Like, am I eating too much? And that's the one thing that's been really interesting is because this particular peptide will trigger, you know, will trigger my satiation. So it makes me full when I'm really full. And then anything that I eat after that is not for sustenance, but it's for filling a void or, you know, pleasure eating, you know? And I mean, that's probably going to be coming out in my next book because it was really, really revealing to me about how people use food, you know, to comfort themselves.
They really do. I think also not even just that, but it's, you know, it's not just about food being used to comfort themselves as much as it is about avoiding the real issues that are causing your mind to go there to begin with. I think that as a society, we've created a lot of these distractions to help us not deal with the way that life has gotten. Also, you know, just in general, I think that, the demands, and it slowed down in 2020, but the demands of us to go from this place to this place to this place to this place, it created a situation where people aren't sitting around the dinner table anymore. They're not using mealtime as conversation and as, you know, like, for example, if we slow down, our body has time to even say, oh, wow, I'm full. Mm-hmm. Instead, we're grabbing a big bag of burgers, you know what I mean, and throwing them towards the back seat while we're driving to the next thing. And there's no opportunity then there for opportunity for connection from the positive things that come from, you know, eating together collectively. And we're not even allowing ourselves the amount of time to say, you know, if I sit here and drink from my water cup and eat a bite and drink from my water cup and talk. Mm-hmm. I start to realize, wow, I'm full a lot faster than I expected I would be, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think it's like a multi-layer thing.
I agree with you. And I think that COVID, you know, has taken away the stabilizing sort of element of ritual, you know, like the ritual of sitting down with a group of individuals, you know, and connecting and sharing a meal. And, You know, it just seems like everybody's been whipped up into such a frenzy, you know, and everybody's living in such a state of fear, you know, and fear is just toxic. You know, it really prevents you from being present, and it really prevents you from, you know, being your true, authentic, excellent self. So I think those things have been, I mean, this is a great lesson for us. I mean, for the past almost 2 years now, I mean, those things have been taken from us. And I think that it's important that we all be mindful and we all try to bring those rituals, you know, and those moments of coming together back. Because that's what makes us human, you know, and that's what makes us independent and strong and courageous, where we're not just like a bunch of sheeple being led by the next crazy thing that we see on social media, right, or the news.
But. Right. And I think that is what has happened, slowly over many, 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 many years, and just more obviously in 2020, you know, like, I think that was happening for a very, very, very long time. The breakdown of the family system, the breakdown of, human to human connection, the breakdown of community. I think that was happening for a long time. I mean, you still see it in a lot of places in rural America, but not so much in the cities. You know, I mean, people don't know the neighbor that lives in the apartment next door to them, you know? And so I do think that there's something to that. I absolutely do.
Yeah. I just think there's a lot of fear right now. And I think that, you know, I think getting to the core of that, like what triggers a person's fear, you know, is going to be key to their development. You know, like, what are the things that scare you? Do other people scare you? Does intimacy scare you? Does, you know, mortality scare you? You know, but being able to touch those things and have people sort the fear out and see what fears, what things, you know, external stimulus are triggering those things. I mean, that's my opinion, whatever it's worth.
Yeah, no, I don't think you're wrong. Talk to me about being a biohacker info geek.
Well, the biohacker thing, the info geek is just, those are like labels that were put on me because I have I don't know if it's like ADD or ADHD or it's just a curious mind, but I'm like an avid reader, but I love reading medical papers and basic research papers. I mean, it's like, I can't seem to get enough of it. So, I mean, that info geek thing is just like, if somebody asks me a question about something, it's like more than likely I've read some sort of a research paper on it. That's the info geek part. The biohacking part I adopted a keto lifestyle about, I don't know, 6 years ago when I wrote my book. And I was just at a time in my life where I really wanted to see if I could enhance my performance, you know, like, could I enhance my mental performance? You know, could I, you know, enhance my physical performance and all of these things? You know, I was researching, you know, different modalities to be able to do that. A lot of it was food related. A lot of it was related to prolonged fasting, intermittent fasting. And, you know, some of it was, you know, taking peptides and a variety of different compounds just to see how I could, you know, increase my performance. And then on top of that was data collection. Like, okay, so what am I experiencing, you know, and can I finish this puzzle in under 30 seconds now? Or, you know, am I able to lift more weight or walk further or run further? That's where the biohacking thing came in. Not always a success. Not always a success. And when there were disasters with it, they were interesting. So that's the info geek and biohacking part of me.
Yeah, a lot like you, I have spent the past, year diving through medical journals myself. So I totally understand and relate to what you are saying. Absolutely. I love geeking out on that stuff. I love to not just take face value and to just continue to research and plow through and, you know, find other things. In general. So aside from stevia, stevia, how do you say it?
Either way.
There are some other natural sugar products that I have found, you know, that, because I don't like the taste of stevia at all. Like, I just really don't like it.
I don't
what
either.
What do you think about some of the other options that there are out there?
Well, I think that there's a lot of great options, you know, like, probably the latest thing that I've been working with has been allulose. You know, and allulose is a rare sugar. It occurs in nature, but, you know, it's produced at scale, through fermentation. So that, I mean, there's a lot of options out there. And I happen to be one of those people that does not like the taste of stevia either. But thankfully it's my job to make sure that people don't taste that. So I've been using, so when you look at stevia, there's these things, these compounds called stevioglycosides, and these glycosides are what makes the stevia leaf sweet. But there's a bunch of different ones, like, and they have a bunch of different names, like stevioside and rhabdoside A and B and C and rhabdoside M, and all of these different, you know, glycosides that exist in the stevia leaf. But then also, you know, there's other things in nature that are sweet, like monk fruit, you know, like
I was going to ask about monk fruit. Yes.
Right. And so within monk fruit also has glycosides in them. And it's not, they're not stevioglycosides like in the stevia leaf, but they're glycosides that are classified as mogricides. So the mogricide 5, compound that's found in monk fruit has the best sort of overall flavor. But what I found is if I can take these individual compounds in the lab, right, and I can take mogricide 5 from, you know, from monk fruit, and then I can use like a rhabdoside A from stevia and a rhabdoside M from stevia and mix all of those various glycosides together, that it really, they mask each other's off notes, but then it also, they trigger the palate at different times. Like, you will get part of it that triggers the palate immediately. You'll get part of it that triggers the palate halfway through. So you get a full technical effect of sweetness all the way through what you're eating. So I know this sounds sciencey, and it is pretty sciencey, but it's stuff that I do. You know, like, somebody will come to me with like a frozen dessert, and they'll be like, yeah, we want to take the sugar out of it, but we don't want any off notes. And that's when I'll use a variety of different glycosides, some allulose, you know, different types of fibers, you know, that come from nature.
Yeah.
And, as well as like some erythritol, which is an alcohol sugar. So I use a combination of all of those to give it, you know, to really produce a product that you can't tell is, it doesn't have any sugar in it.
So fantastic. Tom, how can people find out about your products? Where can they go to learn more about what you offer?
Well, if you're a food manufacturer, you can go to Icon Foods. Like, and or if you're just a science geek like me, then go to iconfoods.com and you can see that's my day job. But if you want to see more of like how I am with keto and some of the keto friendly products that I've created, you could just go to gygonketo.com.
And as always, we include that wonderful information in the show notes. Thank you so much, Tom, for coming on today. It was great to talk about kind of some of just the stuff in the world in the way of food and eating and lifestyle in general. So thank you so much for coming on the BU Find Happy podcast.
Absolutely. Thank you, Michaela.
Take care. Michaela.
This has been a BU Find Happy podcast. For more inspiration, check out the links.